accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Well, I think coming into this year, I wanted to expand my role and continue to get better and continue to develop. I think, obviously, now you know, there's going to be greater expectations going into your second season in the NHL. And playing alongside those guys, at least to start, you know, obviously there's going to be some expectations to contribute right away.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday, September 19th. Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg in studio. That was Adam Lowry you heard off the top. We're going to talk about Adam Lowry's role as, the quasi number one center in the Jets at practice. This past week, obviously training camp has just started. Drew Mandel is away this week. He's actually going to be a father very soon. Well, I guess it'll be very soon. Drew is giving birth to a whopper.
And his wife is giving birth to a girl.
Yeah, I mean, they're simultaneously giving birth. I mean, the other argument, of course, is that, you know, we've been looking for Bernstein's Legal Curve sandwich for a while, and Drew's actually giving birth to the sandwich. So whatever the name is of... anyhow, we won't get into that. Joe Haggerty of CSN New England will be on the show later today to talk about the Boston Bruins. Lots to talk about there. Tons of off-season change. Michael Russo of the Minneapolis Star Tribune will be on to join us to talk about the Minnesota Wild. Of course, the Wild are the Jets' first preseason matchup coming up this Tuesday. That game will be on TSN3. And then Chris Zelkovich of Yahoo Sports is going to be on to talk about the television radio world and the National Hockey League. We haven't had somebody on to talk about sports media in a while. We always find it to be an interesting conversation. So it's going to be a good show. 3 hours. We're back to 3 hours. We returned to 3 hours last week. And we're looking forward to it. Next week's going to be our fantasy preview show, Ezzy. The week after is our NHL regular season preview. So we're getting ramped up for the season. Why don't we start, Ez, with the Winnipeg Jets and the interesting line combinations that were unveiled yesterday?
Yeah, and a lot of fans were getting pretty excited. And some were maybe even getting a little bit scared, Richie, to see that Adam Lowry was lined up with Brian Little on the wing. If you remember, Brian Little played a little bit on the wing with the Atlanta Thrashers before they came over to play for the Winnipeg Jets. And Paul Maurice even said after the first day of training camp, Richie, that you know, this was just something they're going to try out. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the first NHL regular season right. of the year is going to see Brian Little playing on the right side and not at center. But it's interesting because we saw Adam Lowry play with Michael Frolik and Andrew Ladd for a few games last season, but it wouldn't be something that you should pencil in as Adam Lowry being the number one or number two center. He's most likely going to be the number three center. And really, you don't want to get fixated, Richie, I think, at this point in training camp or during the preseason with any line combinations, because it's quite possible, and I know that on Tuesday night at Puck Talks, this came up at the Pint, going over line combinations for the Jets this year. You should probably look at the Jets' first two lines as 1A and 1B, because with Blake Wheeler, Richie, on the second line and Mark Scheifele and Matthew Perreault, or even if you go with Drew Stafford on the second line, but a lot of people have him playing on the first line, is that your second line? I mean, mm-hmm. Blake Wheeler is arguably your best offensive player. I would say he is your best offensive player.
I would agree with that.
And Mark Scheifele, you know, you could say that this might be the year that he takes over for Brian Little as the number one center. And if it doesn't happen this year, it's probably going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years. There's a lot riding on him, and he has that offensive upside that probably hasn't been tapped yet. So I think it's interesting to see Paul Maurice go into these line combinations on day one. But with 55 players in camp, this is the time now that you do these types of things. You do that early on in training camp. You see how Adam Lowry plays, and you see how comfortable Brian Little is on the wing. But don't expect any of these line combinations, for that matter, Richie, to necessarily stick when the season opens up on October 8th.
For clarification, the lines that the Jets trotted out, again, as you mentioned early in training camp, of course, Adam Lowry up the middle with Andrew Ladd on his left and Brian Little on his right the second line, quote-unquote, although I think probably the first line talent-wise, is Mark Scheifele up the middle with Drew Stafford on his left and Blake Wheeler on his right. And the third line was Alexander Burmistrov in the middle with Perreault on his left and Ehlers on the right. That's my understanding, is that Ehlers is on the right. I believe they're going to have him on the off wing of it if anybody has... it wasn't at practice, so that's my understanding. Now, that a couple things I find interesting about this, Ezzy, and I don't want to read too much into it, but at the same time, you want to kind of get a glimpse into what Paul Maurice is thinking. And what I would say is, okay, Drew Stafford on the left side, I find interesting because he's a natural right winger. So you have a natural center in Brian Little who you've shifted to right wing. And then you have Drew Stafford, who played left wing when he came to Winnipeg last year, but really had been a right winger for the entirety of his career going back to his college days. And he performed well on the left side, but it's interesting to see that he's going to be continuing on the left side. And it'll probably be some swapping. We know that Blake Wheeler likes to grab the puck in the neutral zone and go down that left side and use his angles as protecting the puck, and especially on the power play. That's something he likes to do. But I thought that was interesting. Then, of course, I thought the other part was interesting was that Burmistrov was up the middle. So you said it, as you're getting a different look at these players right now, and I think that's important. You want to see who can play where, who can play with who, and you're going to face injuries in the season. That's just the facts, and you want to be able to have flexibility. And the truth is, the Jets do have quite a lot of flexibility. Lowry can play wing and center. Little, I mean, basically any center I think can probably play wing, but Little can play center. He's now tracking him out on the wing. Burmistrov, they can put him on the wing, but he can also play center. Perreault can play center, but they like him on the wing. It's my understanding that Ehlers can play both wings, and Stafford can apparently play both wings. And then you have Wheeler and Scheifele, who are center and right wing. So you see that flexibility. That is important. And we haven't even talked about Dustin Byfuglien being able to move to forward if need be.
And I think you also have to consider, Richie, why I believe Paul Maurice is going to get into these different line combinations early in training camp, is because as the season progresses, and especially in the early part of the season where the schedule is very road heavy, and I think you're going to see, just by the very nature of having three or four young players in your forward core, I think you have to have the flexibility knowing that there are going to be forwards who struggle in the role that they're given. So you're talking about Nick Ehlers, you're talking about Joel Armia, you're talking about whether it's Andrew Kopp who makes the team, or possibly a dark horse like Brendan Lemieux making the team. But all of these rookie forwards that are going to be given a role on the team, and for those four players or five players that we mentioned, those roles are going to most likely be in the bottom six. If one of these players struggles, you have to know that an Alexander Burmistrov, Adam Lowry can switch to wing if needed, or Matthew Perreault maybe has to switch to center. We know because one third of the Jets forwards are going to be different than the team that we saw finish the season against Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
Lee Stempniak, Jiří Tlusty, Michael Frolik, and Jim Slater are gone. So you got one mm-hmm. third right there. Four of your 12 starting forwards are going to be new, and with the exception of Alexander Burmistrov, three of those are probably going to be filled by rookie forwards, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, most likely. I mean, there's a chance,
a
Thomas
sure.
Raffel makes the team, or maybe a Matt Fraser, or Matt Halaschuk is your starting fourth line left wing, or something like that.
That's not significant competition for the young players.
But most likely, you're going to have two or three rookie forwards in the bottom six. So you have to know that you have the ability not just to move players around, but those players that you're moving around. So if it's a Matthew Perreault, for example, maybe mm-hmm. it's center, or as you mentioned, Richie, a Drew Stafford has to move to the right wing or back to the left wing. You have to try that out in training camp now, early on, so that you know early in the season if some of these players struggle. And it's given that these players are going to struggle. I mean, to expect a Nikolaj Ehlers or a Joel Armia to tear up the league in the first 10 games, I think, is unrealistic. It's very rare that you see that happen. You might see Connor McDavid do it. You saw Nathan MacKinnon maybe do it a couple years ago. But for 18, 19, 20-year-old to come into the NHL and completely tear it up is rare. So, it's exciting for fans to see the different line combinations, because nothing is set in stone. And nothing is set in stone for most teams, Richie. Most teams know potentially that their number one line is going to stay the same, or parts of their number one line is going to stay the same. So, you know, you're talking about teams like Anaheim, who know Getzlaff and Perry are going to be on the first line, or, you know, teams like that. But for the Winnipeg Jets, the usual first line of Ladd, Little, Wheeler, I think is not going to be the case this year, because you saw Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler have such a good chemistry together. So now you have 1A and 1B. And what I'm really interested to see, as you mentioned before, Richie, is where does Alexander Burmistrov fit in? Is he going to play center, or is he going to play wing? Is Ehlers going to play on the left side on the third line, or is he maybe going to play on the fourth line? You know, where does a Joel Armia fit in? I think that, you know, if you listen to what Chevy said in the offseason leading up to training camp, it looks like a guy like Joel Armia, who has some AHL experience and some experience playing in the Finnish senior league, You can tell a guy like that maybe has an advantage over Brendan Lemieux, who might have to play one more year of junior. So, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting training camp. It's going to be different, Richie, than in years past, when the questions were more about goaltending and defense. This year, it's all about how the young rookie forwards are going to fit in the bottom six.
Look at that line that Burmistrov, Perreault, and Ehlers. That's a small line. It's an interesting that they go with a line like that. I mean, certainly a line that has skill and can move. But it is a smaller line, and you wonder what kind of game they want to play, big game, small game, and maybe something like that, a line like that would be paired a lot with bigger defensemen, and not like an Enstrom, for example, so there wouldn't be a huge size issue that the Jets would face. You know, Ezzy, there's a lot of talk about, you mentioned the rookies, we should mention Grant Klitsam. It's unfortunate Grant Klitsam doesn't appear. Kevin Cheveldayoff alluded to this a week or two ago, but he's never really specific in any comments. So finally, yesterday, it was announced that they don't expect him to play this year. Unfortunate circumstances. Obviously, takes their one-way contracts down from 10 to 9, and he'll be placed on long-term injury reserve. But a tough break for a guy who, while he certainly has shortcomings defensively, you never want to see a player of that age or any age unable to play because of injury.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate situation, as you mentioned, Richie, for Grant Klitsam, a player that Kevin Cheveldayoff acquired off of waivers from the Columbus Blue Jackets, and then was signed to a three-year contract the following season. And he's only been able to get into 56 games over the last 2 years. He only played 24 games last year, and as you mentioned, you know, it helps with roster flexibility, and as a left-shooting defenseman, it maybe gives slightly more opportunity to a guy like Josh Morrissey, also a left-shooting defenseman. I personally believe it's going to be tough for Morrissey to crack the lineup. Not to say that he doesn't have an excellent NHL career in front of him, but I think that there's a good chance that you'll be seeing him play for the Manitoba Moose this year. Unfortunate for Grant Klitsam, just, you know, and I can relate to that. I'm not an NHL player, Richie, as you know, but I also had some back problems as Grant Klitsam has had, and it's unfortunate. So you hope that maybe there's an outside chance that he's able to continue his professional hockey career, but unfortunately it doesn't look like it's going to be this year.
Quick question before we go to break, and Drew had actually posed this question. If you guys remember, Drew used to host this show every week. Now he hosts once a month. His question was this. There's, and you alluded to it earlier.
We can't be too hard on Drew right now, because he's in the waiting room, or he's in the delivery room right now with his
at a local pizza place. Okay, so his point was, it's an interesting point. There's really no, you mentioned it earlier, Ezzy, there's really no cap competition for those bottom spots. I mean, Matt Fraser and Raffel, I mean, guys we haven't even heard of before. I've heard Fraser, I haven't really heard of Raffel, heard of his brother.
I wouldn't be surprised, by the way, if they're on the roster to start the season, but I wouldn't think that either of those players will play. If Raffel, we don't know a lot about. We know that his brother was good with the Philadelphia Flyers.
What does that mean? But Brent Gretzky.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, and he was good in the Austrian League. But we don't know. It's a PTO.
The Austrian League?
It's a PTO.
It's below the AHL, below the KHL, below the Swedish Elite League.
I'm saying he's got the good bloodlines.
Okay, so the question is, though, is with it appearing to be that the rookies that you mentioned are going to be thrust into the lineup, is it any different than what Atlanta did with their young players and quote-unquote rushing them into the lineup a few years ago that Jets observers have been so critical of?
I know where Drew was going with that question, Richie, but I do think it's different, because I think the stable of Jets prospects now is way more full than it was when the Atlanta Thrashers were around the last two or three years, if you want to call it. So, yeah, you're talking about a guy like Alexander Burmistrov. You're talking about a defenseman like Zach Bogosian, mm-hmm. that was potentially rushed into the NHL because they didn't have that many more prospects that they could choose from. Or not only that, they didn't have players that were in the NHL at the time to fill those roles. So I think it's different because, well, first of all, it's different by the very nature of the management staff that's in place. I mean, it's a different group that's running the team now, and it's a different coach. It's a completely different franchise. But I guess the idea or philosophy or the theory behind it that, you know, you look at Nikolaj Ehlers, he played an extra year in junior. So Burmistrov came in right after junior as an 18-year-old. So totally, if you're going to compare Ehlers to Burmistrov, or if you want to compare Bogosian to Morrissey, I think it's completely different. I don't think at all that the Jets are rushing a guy like Ehlers or even an Andrew Kopp. I think they know these guys are ready. I don't think the Jets are going to put these guys in a position to fail.
To me, it's a kind of a middle ground in that, like, Atlanta was premature in putting those players in positions, I think, to fail more than succeed. Now we have to give a little bit of a break in the fact that these were top 4, 5, 6, 10 players, as opposed to, you know, Bogosian being in the top 5 is different than a guy Morrissey being in the 10 to 15 slot. But in any event, they rushed those players. I don't think there's any doubt about it. The draft and develop catchphrase that we hear all the time, I look at more so like Detroit, where they play they do what the Jets did with Adam Lowry. Play out your junior career, yep. You play a season in the AHL, then you come up, if not more than one season in the AHL. So I think the Jets are actually in the middle of those two. Like, a lot of these guys aren't actually doing that, necessarily. Some of them are, some of them aren't. But I guess my point is, like, the Detroit hardly will rush anybody, period. And Atlanta was rushing everyone, and the Jets seem to be a little bit in the middle. So that's my take on it, at least. I want to go to break here. When we come back, Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien commented on their contracts. Ongoing negotiations yesterday. We're also going to talk about the Jets goaltending battle. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN. Welcome. We're back on the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollack and Ezra Ginsberg. Roy McGoran doing a great job as usual. This segment's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Ezzy, September 24th. Rob Schneider coming up to the 27th, obviously. Big sailor Rob Schneider. We saw him last time he came to town.
You can
hilarious.
Do it! Yeah, he was great last time. I'm going to go check him out again.
What was your favorite Rob Schneider role in a movie? So you can Ooh. Do it?
I mean, he was in a lot of supporting roles.
Yeah.
I mean, Deuce Bigelow was obviously a great movie. Yeah. And then there was, of course, the follow-up, European Gigolo.
Very good in Big Daddy, too.
He was good in Big Daddy.
Yeah.
I always just, like, Rob Schneider, during that era of early 90s, mid-90s SNL, he had so many great characters. Yeah, I forget what the name of that the character was in the copy room.
Making copies? There's a picture of that outside here at the studio.
Yeah. And he would kind of, you know, make fun of everybody's name. Rich Areno, the Richmeister. I used to like that skit back
then. That
was
a great skit. Kevin Nealon was in that too, right? Yeah. We talked before the break about Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien. Let's hear from Andrew Ladd. He was discussing his contract situation with the Winnipeg media yesterday.
The day-to-day stuff I don't get involved in. I think when my agent obviously keeps me informed of what's going on and how the process is going, but I think it's easier to put it on the back burner now that we're getting going and you can just focus on going to the rink every day and what we need to do on the ice. I'm sure both sides were hoping to have something done by now, but you know, sometimes it just doesn't work out that way. So there's been good dialogue the whole time, and they'll continue to talk. And like I said, now I can just focus on getting back to getting up to speed and ready for the regular season.
You know, sometimes you hear people talk, like, I think it was a Players Tribune article, I forget who it was, I believe it was a Seattle Seahawks offensive lineman talking about, you know, wanting to negotiate his own contract and not wanting an agent. And I think really the majority of players feel the way that Andrew Ladd does. I don't want to deal with this, let my agent deal with it. At the end of the day, what Ladd and his agent have likely talked about is a final number. They're probably not close to that, or they are close to it, and he doesn't care. He just wants to know when he needs to make a decision on it. And the day-to-day stuff, as he mentions, you know, is it this year, that year, how do you structure the contract? He doesn't want to bother himself with that. That's why he pays his agent the 3% or whatever it is that his agent's collecting. Do you take anything from those comments? We're going to read Dustin Byfuglien's comments in a second. They might have been a tad more telling, but do you read anything into those, Ezzy?
No, not at all. And, you know, to address your point, Richie, I think that the agent probably wants it to be like that as well. The agent probably wants the player removed from the situation and obviously keeps in contact with the player. Adrian Ladd's agent is obviously keeping him abreast of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he probably doesn't like, and I'm not just speaking about Adrian Ladd's agent, I'm just talking about player agents in general in any sport. They probably don't like when players are asking them every 5 minutes, okay, where are the negotiations at? Have we signed the contract yet? Right. I imagine, you know, maybe for some younger players signing their first or second contracts, maybe that's the case. Maybe Ryan Johansson, for example. No, I'm just kidding. but as far as Andrew Ladd's comments go, Richie, you know, we talked about this last week on the show. These guys are never going to say that ongoing negotiations are a distraction. And I truly believe that they aren't a distraction. Andrew Ladd, Dustin Byfuglien, other players, you know, I mean, you want to throw in Steven Stamkos in there, Kopitar guys who are going to be pending UFAs as well. I think that they go to the gym, they go to the rink, they get ready. You know, they're not thinking about, they might, I'm not saying that they aren't thinking about the contract or aren't aware that a contract needs to be signed, but I don't think that they bring that to the rink. And I truly believe that, and I don't think players bring it up. It's something that is out there, and as you mentioned, Richie, last week, it can
Dustin Byfuglien says, there's a few guys, quote him, I'm going to say that, to touch on that, Ezzy, there are a few guys, this is Dustin Byfuglien, a few guys on the Jets who are telling me to sign, but if it was that easy, it'd be done.
Yeah, exactly. And it's pretty funny. He's making, obviously, light of the fact that in today's salary cap era, which we hear about all the time, it's hard to sign players. Well, it's hard to agree to a number. You know, with the weak Canadian dollar and the fact the salary cap hasn't gone up much since last year. And I thought Dustin Byfuglien's comments were pretty funny. He was a little bit more joking about it.
Well, here's his comments. Dustin Byfuglien's comments, and their comments of people are, you know, I feel like the Winnipeg fans sometimes a little bit insecure. Don't feel so insecure after hearing his comments. I would love to stay here and be a Jet for the rest of my career, but business is business, and I've got to come to the rink and do my job every day. There are a few guys on the team, I just mentioned this comment, who are telling me to sign, but if it was that easy, it would be done. So, I mean, you take those comments to mean he likes to stay in Winnipeg. Now, of course, you can like it all you want. If they offer you $600,000, see you later.
Exactly.
If they offer you eight, seven, six, then a different story.
The business of hockey is separate from your day-to-day obligations as an NHL player. So you got to go to practice. You know, you got to train in the off season. You obviously have to show up ready for games, but whether or not you sign is a little bit out of your control, to be honest with you. And Dustin Byfuglien knows through his agent that the Jets were potentially trying to move him prior to the draft, at the draft. They're listening, as Chevy likes to say, and always having conversations. He knows that. I mean, he knows there's a possibility that if he doesn't get signed between now and the trade deadline, that he could be traded. He knows that that is a distinct possibility because that's the business of hockey. When you have an asset that you're not going to re-sign, especially an asset like Buff, one of the top players on the team, you know that you could be traded. So, you know, I truly believe that both players want to stay in Winnipeg. I've always said that, and they've always said that. There's nothing to believe anything to the contrary, right, Richie? So it's going to be a situation where I believe I've said this all along, that I think Andrew Ladd will be a sure thing, and Dustin Byfuglien is going to be more difficult because I think that he's going to want more money for less years.
Do you believe the last comments, we'll push the goalie segment to later in the show. Do you believe the comment made by Paul Maurice, I'm going to read this verbatim, this is from Jeff Hamilton's article, by the way, in the Winnipeg Free Press from this morning. This is what he said about distractions, Paul Maurice, regarding Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien's ongoing contract negotiations. Not in the room, not how they practice, and not in our world, said Maurice. We love our players, and we want them all signed, and we want them all happy. The business part of that doesn't come in our room. You don't think, Ezzy, it does? I'm inclined to believe that it does to an extent. And I've said it before, I think that these guys are human and it is on their mind and it is on the other player's mind. And when you're making the Jets are making a run, for example, in November, and they don't know if Byfuglien's going to be on the team or not, the players care. So I think it does serve as a distraction. I think certainly distraction level is affected by the quality of player. So if it's Steven Stamkos, a top five player in the league, for example, it's going to be a massive distraction when he goes city to city. Ladd and Byfuglien, like Toronto media doesn't really care about Ladd or Byfuglien so long as they're not going to Toronto, right? Whereas Stamkos and Kopitar, I mean, are going to be talked about every day. So it's a little bit different, the scale of it, but I do think it does serve as a distraction. And let's be honest, Pomerantz isn't going to tell you the truth anyways there, right? Let's be honest. And he doesn't want to start a controversy. He just doesn't.
Right.
And he's going to tell you it's not going to be a distraction. I'm sure he's worried. I mean, I'm sure you got to be worried. A guy like Dustin Byfuglien, when he's been on back defense forward and he has defensive lapses, he could be offensively dominant. You know, I mean, a big contract, if you eclipse a certain point level, does that become more appealing to you? Do you become more appealing in the league? Maybe you don't want to do as much defensive coverage. I don't know. It's a concern, and it has been in the past before.
And so, we've said this for the last 3 or 4 weeks. Paul Maurice, Kevin Cheveldayoff, the rest of the Winnipeg Jets, everyone, fans, the media, well, fans yep. more so than the media, because I guess some fans and some media maybe would like to see Dustin Byfuglien traded. But I think the Jets organization, all the players in the dressing room, they would prefer if both Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien were signed before the season started, right? Because then you know that that's not going to be a distraction. But here we are, second day of training camp, Jets Fan Fest down at the MTS Iceplex today, and both players aren't signed. So what can you do? You have to go about your daily business, and you have to go about preparing for the NHL season and do your best to not let that be a distraction, Richie. Because at the end of the day, as you mentioned, agents handle the contracts, so the players have to handle that distraction. They themselves control whether that's a distraction or not.
But Dustin Byfuglien, I mentioned, could be a distraction. I mean, even Andrew Ladd. I'm not saying, I'm not questioning his character by any means. Neither of their characters. I think, you know, they both give it. And they're both working hard. But if you're Andrew Ladd and you played through a sports hernia last year, you have that same injury this year, for example, and you're coming up on your big last contract, and it may jeopardize how much money you make. I mean, you're human. You think about, this is my last contract secure for my family. Maybe I won't play through it. And you look at it from the perspective of the player. Can you really blame them? Some ways you can, some ways you can't. That's why it makes it a little bit more sketchy. When we come back, Michael Russo of the Minneapolis Star Tribune to talk about the Minnesota Wild, who the Jets face this Tuesday on TSN. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Halfway through the first hour on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Richard Pollack and Ezra Ginsberg. Drew Mandel's away. He will be back, we expect, next week.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're joined on the line by Michael Russo of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Michael, feels like the season ended about a week ago. We're already back at it.
I'm sorry, I was distracted.
That's okay. I said, it feels like the season ended about a week ago, and we're already back at it.
Yeah, I know. You know, especially if you're down here in Minnesota, because there haven't been a lot of changes on the ice. Yesterday, the thing that struck me watching the first practice of the season, the first scrimmage, is that it just felt like any practice from last year, because the Wild really made no NHL additions. The only guy they signed this offseason is Mike Riley. Who might not make the team, and they also signed Ruslan Fedotenko to a two-way contract, but he still, you know, has a lot of work to do to make the team. So this very much could look like the Wild roster of last year, and that means that they're going to take the next step. They're going to need a lot of internal improvement.
Yeah, that's exactly the thing I thought, looking at your lines. You posted them on your Russo's Rants blog, and they do look very similar to last year. So let's get to some of the slight changes, Michael, and Ryan Suter playing, at least starting off with Jared Spurgeon, but you had some comments from Mike Yeo alluding to the fact that he wanted to split up Ryan Suter and Jonas Brodin and give Suter an opportunity to play with a right-side defenseman. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I think they want to get Ryan more offense this year. You know, Ryan had a down year last year, only scored a goal or two, and you know, especially struggled on the power play. So they'd like to give him more of an opportunity, but a lot of it also has to do with, And this is, I think, you know, is going to be a work in progress, is getting Jonas Brodin to tuck him to maybe playing the left side. You know, this year, especially if Dumba is going to make the team, which he almost certainly will, and you have a guy like, you know, Mike Riley who's be in the mix, you don't want to have two rookies, you know, starting off together on the same line. But if you move Brodin to the left side, now you can maybe insulate Jumbo a bit with a very good defensive defenseman who can also create offense in Brodin. And then, you know, the one interesting thing here is they want to really lower Suter's minutes this year. So you put Scandella potentially on what would so-called be the third pair with somebody like Christian Follin, who's also a young defenseman, or Nate Prosser, or if Mike Riley makes the team. Now suddenly, you know, up and down your defense pairs, you're pretty decent. The Wild really boast their blue line. They feel like they have one of the top five blue lines in the NHL. And, and now suddenly it really balances out, and maybe you can insulate some of these rookies.
We talk about Ryan Suter, and we're hearing the same kind of thing from L.A. Michael, you know, Drew Doughty trying to cut down on his minutes. Doughty and Suter do play different games. Doughty's a little bit more, I think, engaged offensively, and Suter is able to conserve energy. Do you think it's necessary to limit his minutes?
Well, first of all, you couldn't have described that better. You know, I mean, the reason why it's a different type of 30 minutes that the two of them play, it amazes me the amount of minutes Doughty puts in. You know, Suter really, he's one of the few defensemen in the league that almost controls the pace of the game, what he wants the game to be played at. He almost illustrates it out there. But I do think it's necessary. I think that late in the season last year, and also late in games, you know, Ryan Suter has a tendency to get worn down in games, especially in the playoffs. And I think that they've got to get him into a more of a suitable, a more appropriate ice time. And the other reason why they should is that this is a great blue line. And, you know, when you have Scandella and Spurgeon and Brodin and then Dumba coming, these guys should be out there more often than they are. And so I think that they have to balance it out. And I think that the other thing that they hope that comes from this is that now when all of a sudden you're on the power play, Ryan Suter has more to give. And last year on the power play, any Wild fan will tell you that he might have been the biggest problem. And you know, for something that led the Wild in ice time on the power play, getting more than 40 shots and 11 points is a must.
Michael, this year is all going to be about the Minnesota Wild getting past that hump, the Chicago Blackhawks in particular. And as you mentioned, as you touched on before, Mike Riley being kind of the big offseason acquisition out of the University of Minnesota, and the forward line's really going to be the same. For you, is the key to getting over the hump and being more successful and going deeper into the playoffs, is it going to come from the veteran forwards who struggled at times, Mikko Koivu, who came on in the second half of the season, but other forwards, Jason Pominville, Thomas Vanek, who struggled at times, is that going to be the key for you for this team to go further into the playoffs?
Yeah, I think partially, but I also think the kids have to take another step. Mikhail Granlund, Charlie Coyle, you know, Wild fans have been waiting. You know, they've heard so much about these kids for so long, and that they want to see them finally erupt. And, you know, and because if you look at the Wild's prospects and their reserve lists, just take Winnipeg Jets, for example. The Wild don't even, you know, they're not in the same universe as a team like Winnipeg with the amount of kids coming. So these are the guys that are going to eventually have to step up here. And, you know, we saw a little bit with Mino Niederreiter last year getting 24 goals. Jason Zucker had a breakout year on pace to 35 if he didn't get injured. And so now they've got to, you know, figure out a way to get these kids like Granlund and Coyle and Holla to take the next step. But you're absolutely right. You know, Pominville, 18 goals a year after scoring 30, not good enough for somebody that plays with Zach Parise and Mikhail Granlund. You know, Thomas Vanek had a miserable first half, had a pretty decent second half considering he was hurt all year, all second half. And, you know, Ryan Suter's got to be better. So, yeah, I think it's a mix. I don't think it's just on the veterans, but absolutely, you know, in the playoffs, you definitely expect more from the Mikko Koivu of the world.
Joined by Michael Russo, Minneapolis Star Tribune. You know, Michael, I look at this roster. There's a lot of skill on the roster, and the trends in the league are interesting, right? You have L.A. and Boston and those teams who play a really physical, big style. And then, you know, last year you see Tampa play Chicago in the finals in a skating team and not a ton of physicality. I look at the Wild and they don't seem like a very physical team to me. If you look at the top 12, maybe Niederreiter, I'm not really sure who else is overly physical. Maybe Ryan Carter. Is that a concern?
I think so. I know it concerns Mike Yeo. He tries to talk around it, but, you know, they're going to give Curtis Gabriel a chance to make this team out of camp. But, you know, right now the other elephant in the room here is that Backstrom is going to probably be the third goalie unless he's willing to go to the minors or they can somehow move him or assign him to Europe. So that would limit the chance of one guy to make the team, which that means I don't know how Gabriel does make the team. But they're built a certain way. They don't have any tough guys. You know, Ryan Carter is probably, you know, maybe their toughest competitor, at least from a checking point of view, but he's not somebody that's going to really scare anybody. So they're going to have to try to win in different ways. And that means, you know, if you're going to Winnipeg and they're going to push you around, you're going to have to try to skate through it. Last year in the playoffs, a guy like Steve Ott tried to do everything possible to get under the Wild's skin and they ate him, and the Wild just, I mean, literally laughed in his face and skated away. And I think that was a big reason why the St. Louis Blues lost. They tried to bully the Wild, and the Wild just knew what they that they couldn't, you know, contend with that, and they just tried to play around it. And, you know, it's easier said than done over an 82-game season where that grind eventually gets to you. And so that's, to me, one of the biggest storylines of the year. You know, are the Wild tough enough to play in a very tough division in conference?
Michael, I know you've written about this before, the notion that Wild head coach Mike Yeo in the past has relied too much on the veteran forwards. Do you think this year, with a player like Mike Riley coming in from University of Minnesota, Matthew Dumba, you know, proved himself that he could play at the NHL level, but even looking at forwards that you mentioned before, Charlie Coyle, Nino Niederreiter, still young forwards, do you think this is maybe the year that he starts to give those forwards and defensemen some more responsibility?
To quote even Mikko Koivu, he has to. You know, this is time. You know, for this organization to take the next transition, it can't always be in the last minute of games having, you know, Parisi, Suter, Vanek, Pominville, and, you know, Mikko out there when they're not getting it done. You know, there's going to be a time where you got to play the Gramlins and the Niederreiters and the Zookers and also give them number one power play unit. You know, last year, the Wild's power play was miserable, and you know, somehow they won in spite of it. You know, they were 28th in the NHL at 11% on the road, and yet they were an unbelievable team in the second half on the road. But, you know, it just got too often where even if those guys were on the shift before a power play, he threw the number one veteran-laden power play out there. And same thing, last minute of the game, if they needed a goal, you knew who was going to be on the ice. And there's just going to have to come a time, you know, especially if you're going to have these guys on long-term deals, the Parisis, the Pominvilles, the Koivus, and the Suters, that, you know, at some point these kids got to play. And so it is up to Mike Yeo to start doing that. And if they don't, I don't know how these kids continue to grow.
We haven't seen 3-on-3 yet at all, Michael, but you have an interesting point on your blog about the Wild possibly employing two defensemen and one forward at times.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about the Wild. I mean, their defensemen are so good at skating that, you know, there's definitely that chance that we're going to see Scandella and Spurgeon both out there at the same time. You know, Suter out there at the same time with maybe a Dumba. You know, Brodine, they have such great skating defense, and that's definitely to me the strength of this team, that there's a very good chance we're going to see, you know, a Dumba almost line up as forward. And you know, if you watch the, you know, and Dustin Byfuglien was there, so he could probably tell you, if you watch those octagon camps that happened last 3 weeks here, watching Matt Dumba out there in these shinny games, you know, he basically leads the rush every time he's up the ice. So, you know, I understand why Mike Yeo says that. I think that, you know, it's going to really depend on the unit. And I think you're going to want a Parisi and Gramlin out there, maybe with a Suter. But then there are times where maybe, you know, you throw a Pominville out there with a Dumba and a Brodine and see what happens there. So it is going to be very interesting. I don't see the Wild being ever one of those teams that maybe even throw out three forwards like that. I think we're going to see some teams too.
Michael, I thought it was interesting. You had a piece, I think it was 3 days ago, in your notebook in the Minneapolis Star Tribune about Zach Parise and Ryan Suter working out with Adam Oates, who's not a coach right now,
right,
with the Minnesota Wild, previously, of course, with the Devils and the Capitals. But was there any negative reaction to that? And I guess for those that didn't read the article, I guess, why were Parise and Suter working out with Adam Oates?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely wasn't well received by the organization. You know, Zach is very close to Adam Oates, actually vacationed with him at one point this summer in Portland. And you know, he wanted one last crash course of skill work and power play work right before the season. They brought in Adam Oates. They skated with him. They went to dinner with him. He watched video with Suter. And they worked on skill work. And I don't think Zach Parise is ever going to apologize for trying to get better. But, you know, the behind-the-scenes drama of this story is that last year the power play was so bad, and there was a lot of behind the scenes drama with it, trying to get it on track. So I just think that the Wild, you know, just really did the coaching staff took it a bit of a slap in the face, and I think it has blown over by now. But it's definitely something to pay attention to, because I know that the organization wasn't happy, and I know the Parisian Suter got talked to about it.
Final question for you, Michael. Assistant coach Daryl Sador You noted has actually extended his stay. His attorney has said he's extended his stay at a facility for treatment for alcoholism. Can you give us an update on that?
Yeah, it's just he's extended his stay. Right now he's been, he's facing charges for drunken driving, 2 counts, and there's aggravating factors. He blew a .3, which is, I know a lot of police officers, and I know one guy that's been a police officer for 30 years and has arrested 3 people in his career at that higher than that level.
Wow.
So that was, for, 6 p.m., that was pretty drunk, and he also had a 12-year-old son in the car. So he's facing some serious charges. But he put himself into the NHLPA substance abuse program. He's out in California until next week, and basically he has voluntarily extended his stay. I think that the Wild are going to continue to support him, and they'll eventually. My guess is that he is going to come back to the organization at some point. Now, is that in a couple of weeks or is that in January? I don't know. I think we'll figure it out. There's a legal thing here too, but the other thing is once he gets out of rehab, it is going to be very important that he continues to face that ongoing, probably for the rest of his life. He obviously has some serious problems. I talked to him about it actually last season when he was sober for the entire season. And, obviously something happened that caused him to relapse. And I think most important is everybody just wants him to, solve whatever's, causing this. And obviously this is a, big time issue in his life. And, like I said, the Wild, he is a family member. If you know Daryl's story, he's a great guy, but obviously he has a problem that a lot of people have.
By the way, Michael, I saw that on Thursday you tweeted that you're already getting your emails from the Marriott about things to do in Winnipeg. So, just let us know. Your friends here at Illegal Curve will let you know what's going on in Winnipeg. So don't be shy to send us an email.
I will not be in Winnipeg very long. I think I get in like two or three hours before Tuesday's game, and I got like a 6 a.m. flight home. So, I just probably need a place to get Starbucks and lunch.
All right. Well, we'll catch you here, Michael, and throughout the year. Appreciate your time this morning. Enjoy your weekend.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thanks very much. Michael Russo, always insightful on the Minnesota Wild, the Jets rival with all the division play that you see now. And, of course, Tuesday here on TSN 1290 and on TSN 3. You mentioned Daryl's story and some of the legal issues there. We're going to talk about Patrick Kane after the break. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
It was great for Sutton Sentinel way back when, Ezzy. Dating myself there.
I remember that.
Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Rory McGoran. Having a good time here on the Legal Curve Hockey Show.
That was a great concert Thursday night.
I'll tell you, AC/DC, great show. Exact same show I saw in 2010 here. Same solos, same everything.
And that's the way it should be.
Is it?
I don't think you screw with the formula. That's what I love about AC/DC. They played a few songs off the new album.
Oh, those were so terrible.
But for the most part, I didn't.
Let me tell you something, Ezzy. Those new 3 songs were terrible.
Well, they all sound very similar, right? But they're going to play the classics, Back in Black.
Oh, yeah, those are great.
As we just listened to, Thunderstruck, Shoot to Thrill, all of that. I thought one of the best parts, or the best part, which is always the best part, is Angus Young just going nuts on the guitar. I mean,
it's probably the highlight.
If he's not one of the best guitarists of all time, I know, Richie, you put a guy like Eric Clapton up there. You got to put a Joel Walsh of the Eagles in there. Many good guitarists. I'd put Hendrix in there too. But
for sure,
Angus Young is just incredible. And it was tons of fun. I probably drank a little bit too much beer and wasn't as productive at work on Friday as as I probably could have been. I apologize to my employer. But, yeah, it was an awesome concert, and, that bus ride at the end that took an hour to get back to River Heights was not fun, but the concert itself was, it was a 5-star concert, in my opinion.
Got 4 stars in the Free Press.
Yeah.
You think 5?
Absolutely.
Apparently Angus fell during the show. Did you read that?
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, we didn't notice it when we were at the
show. But why would we have to read it? We were there.
But I would have thought, okay, then I would have seen that. Any event. Patrick Kane, transition here. Patrick Kane, as he obviously making headlines, has kind of for the past month and a half or so. I guess the question is, For people who don't know, he showed up at Blackhawks training camp this week and was thrust in front of reporters, but read a statement and then didn't take any questions in regards to the pending investigation or the investigation and possible charges that may result from the investigation. What were your thoughts on everything that happened there? I mean, a lot of people have been very critical of the Blackhawks organization and how they handled it. I guess if that's the case, I wonder, you know, what would you have done alternatively? There certainly are other options. And do you think that he should be at camp?
Well, and I think Rory's got the statement queued up, and we'll play it in a second. But, you know, I think that, you know, the whole situation right now is unfortunate, Richie.
Yeah,
and it's sure. Not a situation that the Chicago Blackhawks wanted to be dealing with after winning their third Stanley Cup in 6 years,
mm-hmm.
and after the busy offseason that they had, trading Brandon Saad, you know, losing Johnny Oduya,
Brad Richards. I mean,
the off season for Stan Bowman and Norm McIver has been extremely busy, and this whole situation, and it's not just the management that has to deal with it. It's Patrick Kane and his teammates.
Right.
And, you know, we had Tracy Myers on 2 weeks ago, and we asked her if she thought that Patrick Kane was going to be in training camp, and it was pretty much up in the air. And she
didn't know.
She didn't know at all. And, you know, I know Gary Lawless wrote about it in the Free Press yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and I agreed with everything that Gary said, and he had a quote in there from Flames president Brian Burke, you know, a former lawyer himself. And Gary was right to say that at this point it's all about speculation. And you can't keep him out of training camp based on speculation.
Don't I read the Burke quote from Gary's article? The quote is, if you were accused but not charged of sexual assault, would you be allowed to go to work tomorrow? Yes, you would. And if your employer tried to prevent you from doing so, you would win the grievance, said Burke.
And that's the truth. And I'm not on Patrick Kane's side. I'm not on anybody's side. It's just that we don't know enough about the case. You know, and I've heard, you know, people compare this to similar situations like a Ray Rice in the NFL and, you know, other instances of domestic abuse and all of that. But you can't have this cookie cutter type of justice as Gary and Brian Burke talked about. Cookie cutter meaning you can't just look at each case as a whole, or you can't lump all of the cases together. Each case has to be taken on an individual basis because you need facts, and you have to believe that the NHL and the NHLPA are aware of what's going on with these proceedings. And, you know,
I shouldn't say for sure. I mean, the NFL has kind of exhibited that maybe they want to know and they don't want to know, and then, you know what I mean?
Why don't we play Patrick Kane's quotes, Richie, and then we'll talk about them.
I have too much respect for the legal process to comment on an ongoing matter. I am confident that once all the facts are brought to light, I will be absolved of having done nothing wrong.
Well, that sounded natural. we know, I mean, Patrick Kane read the quote, and what are you going to have him say to the media? But I'm not so sure he wrote that quote. In any event, we didn't expect him to. This is the thing, okay? So the media was, some of the media were upset that he didn't take questions about it, but was put in front of the media. Well, I'm shocked that the media thought he would actually take questions on it. And if he was there and advised by the Blackhawks and whoever else to appear and read the statement and answer any questions that weren't regarding that, then so be it. I mean, again, he's not going to answer the questions you want. If he's not available or is available, I'm not sure if it makes much of a difference. He's not going to answer them anyways. But the criticism, like Sean Gentile of the Sporting News said, the criticism of the Blackhawks are the Blackhawks are tone deaf to what's going on. Do you think that's fair to say when we're in the investigation stage and charges have not yet been made?
No, I don't agree with him on that case or that particular point. Look, at the Chicago Blackhawks are having to deal with their star player here. There are ramifications if they keep him out of training camp.
Hold on. Let me get in on that. If this is blank player from the Blackhawks who's a seventh defenseman and doesn't play, do you think he is suspended?
Well, that goes back to what we were saying about cookie cutter justice, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's possible, Rich, that player is kept out of training camp. I don't know. I mean, we're talking about a hypothetical.
It's hypothetical. Right? I'm not. Yeah, there's no right answer there.
Right, and if you look at the Slava Voynov situation,
he was charged though.
He was charged with a crime, And Patrick Kane has not been charged with a crime.
That's right.
It is an accusation at this point, getting back to what the lawman was writing about in the Free Press yesterday.
Nice play on words there.
So, I mean, right now, you're dealing with not only the public and public opinion, you're dealing with your star player and how he's going to react to potentially being held out of training camp and not being able to get into his routine leading up to the season. And I realize, Richie, that the victim has as much rights here as the accused.
Mm-hmm.
But you are innocent until proven guilty. And again, I don't want to come across as if I'm defending Patrick Kane.
I don't think that is coming across that way.
I'm just saying that you can't jump to any conclusions about him or any player in any type of situation, in any work environment.
It's in any environment, period, is what you're saying, really.
Right. And Rich, we've had a rough year here in the hockey world. I mean, it hasn't been a good year when you talk about what's happened on off-ice issues with some of the LA Kings, as we mentioned earlier. It's been a rough year for the NHL. It hasn't been a good off-season. Coming off of the Chicago Blackhawks winning their third cup in 6 years, as I mentioned before, and this issue with Patrick Kane. But again,
I've been critical of Gary Bettmanezzi of a lot of the things that he's done, but I do think he's far more qualified to handle a situation like this than Roger Goodell is. I think he's more measured. I think, frankly, he's smarter than Roger Goodell. And I think he's actually it's hard not to be like, Goodell's not respected, but Bettman, you might not like him, but I think he's respected. And I think that he is more
capable. He's been commissioner for over 20 years now.
I just think his background and his ability and his relationship.
He's a smart guy.
Yeah, and I think that
he hasn't made many wrong decisions, has he?
Well, he's made a few wrong decisions. But I mean, he's made some right decisions too. Don't get me wrong, you know. So I've been critical of him, but
he's not perfect.
He has a lot of strengths too, and I think his handling, like what he will do with this, will be better than what Roger Goodell mismanaged all of the issues that the NFL had. So I think the NHL are in good hands that way, and I think you'd be foolish to think that John McDonough, who's highly regarded by the National Hockey League and the president of the Chicago Blackhawks, isn't communicating with the National Hockey League on a fairly regular basis. We're going to leave it there. Joe Haggerty, Comcast New England, going to join us next. Talk about the Bruins. Talk about a crazy offseason. The team is almost unrecognizable from the end of last season. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
And a giveaway, they score! Grabner again! Miscommunication between the defenseman Riley and the goaltender Bernier. It's Grabner 2, Toronto 1. It will be his second shorthanded goal on the same penalty kill.
Top of the hour, a Legal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg in studio. You heard Michael Grabner there off the top, Ezzy. He was the subject. Joe Haggerty, we're going to push back a little bit in the show. We're going to talk about the Leafs here, and they made a trade this week. Michael Grabner, as you hear there, former Manitoba Moose, Florida Panther, New York Islanders, now been moved to the Toronto Maple Leafs for 16 forwards. 16 prospects were traded in that deal. Now, the Maple Leafs were trying to get under the 50 NHL contract limit, and they traded away forwards Taylor Beck, Carter Verhaeghe, defenseman Matt Finn, and Tom Nielsen, and goaltender Christopher Gibson. So, as you can see there, is a quantity for quality, Ezzy? Much ado about nothing? What do you think?
Well, first of all, Michael Grabner really fell out of favor with the New York Islanders last year and was a healthy scratch for many of the last regular season games. And the Toronto Maple Leafs are clearly continuing to bring in a lot of veteran forwards because there are a lot of jobs up for grabs. I mean, we saw the Maple Leafs bring in Devin Setoguchi first, and then they signed Curtis Glencross to a PTO. They signed Brad Boyes to a PTO. This is a rebuilding year for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You're going to see some young players in the lineup, but they still have so many openings that a guy like Michael Grabner is appealing for them. He's a guy that might play in their top six.
Are you sick of the Leafs already?
Well, the Toronto Maple Leafs this year, I actually like some of the moves they've made. The Phil Kessel trade, I think, was the right move.
Mm-hmm.
But Mike Babcock, Brandon Shanahan, Lou Lamoriello, they know that this is going to be a long year. They know that most likely they're not going to make the playoffs. I don't think they're going to say that. But the Toronto Maple Leafs, based on the moves they've made, Rich, and the fact that they weren't very good last year after they fired Randy Carlyle, would make you believe that this is going to be a pretty trying year. And, you know, the Islanders, again, you know, Brock Nelson, I know we'll probably get into
that later. Yep, yep.
But he re-signed. And, you know, you're talking about a team that has guys like Michael Dal Colle coming in.
Well.
And not Josh Hosang. But Michael Dal Colle is a guy, you know, that they think highly of. So, Michael Grabner didn't really fit in there.
Well, he didn't fit in at the end of last year. We're talking about the Maple Leafs here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Michael Grabner, as he was making $3 million a year, that's a big thing. You talk about Brock Nelson's contract extension that he signed. Grabner makes $3 million. He's 27 years old. He's probably younger than you think, but he's a pending UFA. So the Islanders are able to open up some cap space this year. They're able to get a couple of guys, prospects. Some people think the goaltender may not be bad. I don't know anything about the prospects, frankly. I haven't seen any of them play. There's five of them, so they can't be that good. Okay. Grabner is a tremendous skater. Sometimes I think, fairly often, I think he plays with tunnel vision a bit. They can't harness the speed and utilize his teammates properly. Lou Lamoriello alluded to the fact that he'll help on the penalty kill. But there is some value here, I think, in the sense that I think the Toronto Maple Leafs, in my opinion, are acquiring a lot of these guys to dish them off later in the season, to accumulate prospects. As you mentioned, I think the one concern Toronto may have is that Babcock's such a good coach that he actually gets them to overperform this year and they get a worse draft pick than they probably want for the long haul.
It's possible. As we know, Mike Babcock has a record of success that's unparalleled, really, in recent memory with the Detroit Red Wings.
Joel Quenneville might have something to say about that.
Well, yeah, Joel Quenneville, and I mean, there are other coaches that...
Daryl Sutter.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that just because these guys keep winning and Babcock still. And I think Babcock's the best coach, don't get me wrong, but I do think those guys need to be thrown in there.
You're right. And, you know, with the Toronto Maple Leafs, there are many question marks about the goaltending. There are question marks about the defense. And, you know, it's quite possible, Rich, that you have a situation where they play themselves out of, you know, the Austin Matthews sweepstakes and they end up finishing close to a playoff spot or maybe even getting into the playoffs. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Eastern Conference surprised a lot of people last year with how competitive it was. A team like the Boston Bruins, for example, not making the playoffs, and the Ottawa Senators making the playoffs. So I think there are other teams that I have making the playoffs this year, you know, previewing you know, some of our predictions to come in the weeks. But, you know, teams like the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Philadelphia Flyers, I think, are knocking on the door to make the playoffs. And it's going to be tough for some of these teams to make the playoffs again. So the teams like the Ottawa Senators, teams that were kind of in the bottom two right there. So I think that, you know, the Leafs have, again, I like some of the moves they've made. But it's to fill patchwork. It's to fill voids that have been left by other players. So, you know, you're going to see P.A. Parenteau get a chance, and in Montreal it didn't work out. You're going to see Sean Mathias probably be the third line center, or at the very least be the fourth line center. So they've done a nice job of filling the roster, because Mitch Marner, William Nylander, players like this. They're a few years away. You know, you talk about rushing players.
Yeah.
I mean, do you want to rush Mitch Marner into the NHL as a third overall pick?
Too small.
Or was it fourth overall, third or fourth
overall? He's got to bulk up a bit and get a little bigger.
Yeah,
and,
so, I mean, Nylander, Marner, the top prospects of the Toronto Maple Leafs, they're a few years away. They got Kasperi Kapanen in the Kessel trade. You know, maybe he makes the team this year, but I'd say he's probably a year or two away as well. So you got to fill the roster up with veterans and guys on PTOs like Glenn Cross and Boys.
I mean, the Leafs are a pretty down team, and we're going to see so much of them on TV. I don't want to beat them up too much. Let's move over to the Islanders more so, Ezzy. We talked about their perspective of the trade. They create some cap space. Brock Nelson signs this week $2.5 million on a 3-year deal off an entry level deal, which takes him to 1 year left of arbitration eligibility before he becomes a UFA. So both the team and the player get a little bit of leverage. Usually you see a 2-year bridge deal. Here you see a 3-year. I'm going to ask you about the Brock Nelson trade signing first, as he then about some other acquisitions by the Islanders. Do you like the $2.5 million per year deal for a 3-year deal for Brock Nelson?
That sounds like Garth Snow did a pretty good job there. Brock Nelson had his best year in the NHL last year. You know, as an aside, I don't know why they gave Marek Zielicki 1.5.
Well, I want to talk about that after.
And giving him all those bonuses. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure if they watched him play last year for the New Jersey Devils. He could barely skate. But
hold on. But one of the reasons they were able to trade Grabner is because, and he's a great skater, is because they have a ton of skating. They have good speed. And this team can move the puck, right? And they can move. Like, you have guys with a lot of skill and guys who are able to move around the ice. I think that allowed them to do that. Nelson gives them more size. I mean, he had 42. Well, I'll get to Zielicki in a second, okay? But he had 42 points. He played all 82 games last year, Nelson did, all right? And 2.5, I think the Islanders have always got great value out of their second contract. I'm not sure this is not another one of those.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think Garth Snow did really well here. And Brock Nelson was a player who signed a little bit late. We talked about him last week. We thought maybe he'd sign in August or even July.
I should interject. The Islanders had their internal deadline where they don't sign. RFAs need to be signed by December 1 as per the CBA. The Islanders had their own internal deadline that if he didn't sign before camp began, then he wasn't going to play all year.
Right.
Weird rule.
And we know that the New York Islanders stick to their rules, and that's why Josh Hosang was sent back to junior after coming to training camp late. So,
do you like that decision, by the way?
Yeah.
I mean, agree with you.
You're a player just like any other player, but especially as a rookie, you know, drafted in 2014, you come to practice late or training camp late. I mean, it shows a lack of respect for the organization and the other players. So you can't really argue with that. I mean, it's like any other job. Do you want to come to work late your first day? Probably not, right? Mm-hmm. So no problem with that. But yeah, Brock Nelson's a good forward, Rich. We watched him play at UND, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And this team, you know how much I like them. I picked them to go to the Eastern Conference Finals last year, yeah. And I'll probably be picking them to go to the Eastern Conference Finals again this year.
If Travis Hamonic is healthy, as we were talking about the Islanders here on Illegal Curve.
I think they beat the Capitals.
I think it's very possible they beat the Capitals.
And the Capitals are a great team.
I mean, they might be a favorite this year, too.
But the Capitals, I think, you know, got a little bit lucky. Travis Hamonic wasn't up against Ovechkin and Backstrom, Richie. But, I know. I really like the Islanders. Good contract for Brock Nelson.
Before the break, Zielicki, you don't like the contract?
Well, I don't think he's the defenseman that he once was. I think 10 years ago with the Nashville Predators, he was a 1-2 defenseman. But yeah,
ten years ago.
Well, it concerns me that they'd go out and sign him. Because
they got Boychuk and Hamonic, though. He's going to be their third right side guy.
What does that mean for some of the younger defensemen, like a Ryan Pollock? Probably means that they feel like he should play in the AHL for one more year or 1 year before, you know? So it just, I mean, they've got other defensemen there, Letty, Boychuk, Hamonic. I mean, DeHaan. So Zidlicky's obviously going to be a third-pairing defenseman. I think that his skills have deteriorated as he's gotten older.
Maybe they feel like he could play some second-line power play and then help on the right side, be a right-side shot and take some stress off some of the other players. I don't mind as much as you do, Ezzy, so long as I understand what you're saying. He can't be thrust into a role with a lot of responsibility, Marek Zielicki.
And you're talking
not
about
physical,
probably,
not fast.
Probably playing a Kimmo Tiimonen type of role that he played on the Blackhawks last year. Once you get into the playoffs, as the Islanders most likely will be, maybe Zielicki doesn't play much.
That's fair. Absolutely fair. When we come back, Joe Haggerty is going to join us from CSN New England. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, back in studio on the Legal Curve Hockey Show. This segment's brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop. Plus so much more, like soccer, to shoes, to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me.
Hotline.
We spoke earlier in the show to Michael Russo of the Minneapolis Star Tribune about a Minnesota Wild team that made very few changes over the offseason. We're going to move over to Joe Haggerty now of CSN New England to talk about the significant changes undergone by the Boston Bruins during their offseason. Joe, how are you doing?
Hey guys, how are you?
We're doing well, Joe, and let's start off with the article that you wrote on Tuesday about the Bruins. I'm sure you've spoken a lot about this. We want to get to other topics, but we will start with this first. The idea of the article, the theory of the article, was that the Bruins became a divided team last year, and the chemistry that they had had in years past was lost. Why do you think that was?
Well, I think there was a number of different reasons, you know, and I kind of go through the timeline a little bit in the article, but, it starts with the loss of some players that were the real connective tissue of that dressing room and that group that had so much success, that won the cup, that, you know, made the playoffs 7 years in a row and everything else. When you let Sean Thornton go in free agency and then you trade away Johnny Boychuk right before last season starts, that's two very significant players that were connective players that brought everybody together. Some people call them glue guys, but their personalities, their people, they keep the dressing room light, they keep it fun for everybody, but they also make sure that everybody is included, you know, whether it's a veteran that would otherwise sort of be on the outside and feel like he didn't, you know, belong to what was going on with the team or didn't feel like he was a part of the group, or if it's young kids that just get called up from Providence, or, you know, some young guy that made the team that wasn't expected to. Those were the kind of players that would, you know, put their arm around that player's shoulder and, you know, sort of push them towards the rest of the group and make sure that they felt welcome and comfortable. And, you know, Andrew Ferentz was a guy like that that they lost a couple years ago as well. So when you see a steady progression of those kind of players going out of the dressing room and they're not being replaced by players in the dressing room that are doing the same thing, I think that by definition just starts to make it more difficult to foster that team chemistry. And then, you know, last year when you started to have the injuries, the losing, and I think, some serious salary cap issues that left voids where young players had to step in and do a lot more maybe than was even fair to ask them to do, you start to see where the cracks can develop in that team. And, you know, as I wrote in the story, it really became a group of veterans that in some ways were worried about their own situations and, you know, some guys that were entering free agency or thought they were going to be traded or, you know, they were hurt or, you know, they had other things going on. And you had them not being as welcoming to the young players. And then you had a bunch of young players who just never felt like they belonged, you know, and that's difficult. That's not good for a hockey team. That makes for a dysfunctional dressing room. From the veterans' perspective, they looked at a group of young players that came in, couldn't get the job done for the veterans that they were trying to replace in the lineup. And I think that's where, you know, you see that disconnect between the two groups. And, you know, it was very, very different. I'm a guy that's covered that team for 13 years and been with them through this entire run. Last year's dressing room felt radically different from any dressing room I had covered during this current stretch with this group of players. You could tell something was wrong, and it's pretty easy to see why when you start putting all the numbers together.
It's interesting. Peter Chiarelli obviously has moved on to Edmonton, Joe, but did he lose, like, you know, some GMs will have certain players in the locker room that they'll always be close to, and that's their pipeline into the information of how the locker room is flowing. Obviously, they talk to the coaching staff as well. Was there a disconnect between management and the players? How did that all come to be?
I think that, yeah, there certainly might have been a little bit because you lost some players that had been there a long time that, you know, Peter Chiarelli had a good relationship with, but I think it was more, to be honest with you, maybe some of the players were, it was a gut punch when they traded Boychuk last year. I don't think you can underestimate how impactful that trade was in a negative sense to the team and to the, overall feeling in the room and the morale level. And I also think, you know, there was some feeling that the GM, you know, probably made some tough choices and got them into salary cap trouble and couldn't get them out. And then made that trade, and I do think there was a little more of a wall put up maybe between the players and the front office last year than there ever was before. And look, the players know which way the wind is blowing too, and you know, I'm sure that they knew that there was also an element of, you know, Cam Neely being the president of the team and there being some divide between Cam Neely and Peter Chiarelli, and Cam Neely wanting full control of the team and not really feeling like he could get it and as long as Peter Chiarelli was there, because Peter Chiarelli predated Cam Neely being hired and named as president. So, you know, there was a lot going on that I think came to a head last year, and I think you saw it turn into the ice into a real uninspired sort of sleepwalk product on the ice. They didn't play with the emotion and the energy that they usually do. The effort level was extremely inconsistent. And it just didn't look like the motivated group that you're seeing before. You know, I think part of that might have been that a team was fat and happy on a lot of success, and I think part of it was, you know, the dysfunction at a lot of different levels that we've already talked about.
Joined by Joe Haggerty of CSN New England.
Joe, you just tweeted about this about an hour ago, and that is about the line combinations and the new look line of Matt Bolesky with David Krejci and David Pastrnak, who had a fantastic second half of the season last year for the Boston Bruins. I guess a two-part question. Do you think that that line is going to stay together as you proceed through regular season, preseason and into the regular season? And is it safe to say that, you know, the offense that has been left by Carl Soderberg and others, Riley Smith, do you think that's going to be replaced by Bolesky and Pastrnak, who, again, had a great rookie season last year?
Yeah, I think there are a few. Obviously, at the start of training camp, the coaches, you know, throw a lot of different things together. Mm-hmm. I think some they put together because they want to look at them and give a real long look at that combination because they have an idea that's what they want to start the regular season with. And other times there are other reasons, like Zach Sinishin, the 18-year-old first-round pick, that last controversial pick that a lot of people said the Bruins reached for with their last first-rounder in June. He was put on the right wing with Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron yesterday as well. So, you know, there's some of that, but I think this Matt Bolesky, David Krejci, David Pastrnak line is one that Claude Julien and his coaching staff want to take a long look at and maybe have an idea that that's what they want to start the regular season with. And, you know, it makes sense. You saw Krejci and Pastrnak have pretty good chemistry last year when they played together. They're both very creative. They both have good hockey minds, and they worked well together as a duo. And the feeling is that Matt Bolesky brings some of the qualities that Milan Lucic had on the left wing with David Krejci. He's not as big. He doesn't have the track record of, you know, putting together 25-goal, 50-point seasons like Lucic did for a stretch there with Krejci. But the feeling is he's, you know, he can bring some of the elements of physicality, and he's got a good shot, and some of the things that Lucic had. So, you know, they had in mind to look at that line. I think it's an intriguing top offensive line if they do keep them together, and it could start to give you an idea that, you know, maybe the Bruins are going to be okay offensively. And, you know, they did lose some good offensive players in Riley Smith and Carl Soderberg and Dougie Hamilton on the back end, who was a very good offensive player. And, you know, I think it's going to be a challenge for them to be better offensively losing some of those guys. But they also finished 22nd in the NHL in offense last year with these players. I think a healthy David Krejci, I think David Pastrnak, that's a year older, I think bringing in guys like Jimmy Hayes and Matt Bolesky. And also, I think if you look at the lines forward-wise, the depth is much better as far as offense from top to bottom. So it'll be more balanced scoring. I think they can improve offensively on last year, but a lot of it hinges on the back end and their blue line and making sure that they have enough, even though, you know, they traded Dougie Hamilton this summer after trading Johnny Boychuk last year and not replacing either one of those guys with NHL-ready players.
Well, Joe, the Jets open the season against the Boston Bruins, and when the season opens, you think there's a good chance we're going to see at least a couple of young defensemen? Dennis Seidenberg's injured right now. Mm-hmm. You wrote about this in your notebook for CSN New England. I guess, should we expect to see, you know, two of Colin Miller, Joe Morrow, or Zach Trotman, who was skating with Zdeno Chara for day one of training camp?
Yeah, and as you mentioned, I think that Zach Trotman and Zdeno Chara pairing is another one of those combinations that the coaches want to take a long look at because they feel like that maybe that's what they're going to start the regular season with. And Trotman was with Chara at the end of last year when Dougie Hamilton got hurt and really made a nice jump forward and had his best NHL stint to date at the end of the season. And, you know, he's on a one-way contract, so I think it's a given that he's going to be there and is a big 6'3", 6'4" kid that can shoot the puck and, you know, set the standard with 41 pull-ups during the off-ice testing the other day, which is a ridiculous amount for a big guy like that. So they like a lot of what he brings to the table, and I do think at least he will be there. And certainly they're going to give a long look to guys like Joe Morrow and Colin Miller. And Miller, just watching him today, I know he had put up big numbers for Manchester in the AHL last year, and he looks great on the breakouts, just fast, smooth, creative. A lot of the things that the Bruins are going to need as they tweak their system, and they're going to go to a little more of a quicker moving the puck up the ice system where they're overloading on wings and overloading zones and trying to create, you know, breakouts and, you know, odd man rushes and things that they never really did before. They're going to start to open it up a little bit more offensively, and you know, going towards guys like Morrow and Trotman and Miller makes a lot of sense if they're moving in that regard. You know, I was just having a conversation with somebody before I got on the phone with you guys. When you look at the defensemen that they have and you look at the goaltending they have now with Jonas Gustafsson coming in, and I think they maybe want to go with him as a backup just because he's a veteran and they feel more comfortable doing that. They're going to have a surplus of goalies and defensemen if it shakes out like that. And I have a feeling they're not done dealing and rearranging their roster at this point. We might see another deal or two before the season starts because the numbers just don't add up. They've got some extra players here with some young guys that they really want to take a look at.
Joe Haggerty, Bruins Insider, CSN New England, joins us. Joe, you know, you talk about tweaks to the system, and I saw some Joe Morrow comments about that and some other players. Is that a decision, the decision to change the kind of the system? Obviously, the roster has been changed significantly, but some coaches don't like to change their system. So is Claude Julien doing this out of his own accord, or is somebody else saying, you know, you need to change or this is not going to work?
No, he's not. He's doing it because Don Sweeney said this is what you have to do if you want to be the head coach of the Boston Bruins next year. This is Don Sweeney's vision in a lot of ways, and Cam Neely's too, and what they want to see more of on the ice and what they see the trend in the NHL going towards, which is, you know, a much more quicker, a much better transition, focusing on the skill and the speed game more so than anything else, and, you know, being safe with the, you know, the chip-and-go sort of systems of the past and the real D-to-D stagnant breakouts that they've had at times. And as forechecks have gotten more aggressive, I think the Bruins were exposed a little bit, and now they're trying to combat that by, you know, doing things a little more quickly. But they have to have, A, the coaching staff that can implement that and embrace it and keep going to it even when things get tough.
Yeah.
And you've got to have the personnel, especially with the defensemen, to be able to implement that system and execute it. And, you know, there's a lot of question marks as to whether this is the right coach or the right defenseman combination and core to get this system working. And, you know, that's one of the questions that we all have is how long is this going to work once the regular season starts? This is a coach in Claude Julien that's had a lot of success doing it his way and is now sort of being pushed to do it somebody else's way.
Well, that's the thing, right? Right, Joe? I mean, you look at it, and if he's made, Don Sweeney made so many changes this offseason, I mean, the trades and then the shuffling and this and that, free agent signings, why not just overhaul it completely and not try to, you know, implement a system through a coach who's not necessarily comfortable doing so?
Because last year was the first year that Claude Julien didn't make the playoffs because he's, you know, 36, 35 wins behind Art Ross for the most wins in franchise history. Now, he's a good coach, and he's done a lot of really good things. And I think they felt like they owed him, you know, another shot and to see if he could do this. And he has shown that he can adapt and adjust in his career. I don't think to this degree, but, you know, I think they felt like given all that he's done, he deserved to get that second chance. Based on a lot of the things went wrong last year, and they're giving it to him. But I also think, you know, clearly Don Sweeney's a guy that's prepared and has a plan, and there's no doubt if things aren't working out in the first few months and if, you know, things go sideways for the Bruins with all of this, that he's got some other people in mind to replace Claude Julien if things don't go well. I don't think that Claude Julien's going to get a long, long leash this year if there's losing streaks and adversity to start the season.
Joe, we know that Tuukka Rask is the number one goaltender in Boston, but as far as the backup goes, do you believe Malcolm Subban has the inside track on that, or is it a battle between him and Jeremy Smith, and even they've got Zane McIntyre, who played for UND last year? Is it going to be a three-way battle, or do you think Subban has that inside track there?
Well, I think, you know, obviously they still feel like he's a talent, and, you know, he was drafted in the first round for a reason. But when you look at the whole entire situation, you know, they brought in a veteran guy in Jonas Gustafsson on a tryout contract because I think they felt like they wanted to look at a veteran goalie potentially as Tuukka Rask's backup, given that they had Nicholas Svedberg, a young guy in that position last year, and it didn't work out, and he really lost confidence in the second half of the year. And, you know, there was a stretch for about 6 weeks where he couldn't even get through a game fully. And couldn't give Tuukka the rest of the night off, and that forced Tuukka Rask to play a ton of games in the middle of the season and you know, really wear him down. So I think job number one for them is to find a guy that they have confidence in that can do it and will be comfortable being a backup. And, you know, we all know that's a challenge for young guys like McIntyre or Subban or even Smith because they're used to getting the call a lot. And it's going to be a challenge for any one of them to go from being a guy that plays, you know, 40 to 60 games a year all of a sudden being a guy that plays like 15. And maybe Gustafsson mentally and physically is a little more attuned to that kind of role. So they're going to give him, I think, a long look in camp and give him a chance to win the job. I would say, honestly, that Smith might have the inside track if it's one of those other three because he might be the one that would most easily adapt to that backup role And he's been, you know, around a little bit in his pro career, so he's seen a few things and he might be able to handle it. And he's coming off a really good year in the AHL as well. But I think the feeling with the Bruins is, all things considered, unless either Subban or McIntyre is completely lights out during camp and, you know, it's clear that they belong in the NHL, I would think that both of them would start the year in Providence and continue to develop. You know, when you watch Subban play that game against St. Louis last year, and he gave up 3 goals on 3 consecutive shots on the second period, you could tell he wasn't ready for the NHL. And talking to people around the Bruins, I'm not sure that they think he's ready to start this year as well. And maybe he needs another at least half season of developing in the AHL before he's ready. So they don't want to repeat the mistakes of last year and have a guy here that's, that can't be Tuukka Rask's backup and isn't suitable for the role. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But if I were guessing right now, I would say that Gustafsson starts the year as the backup. And, you know, if Subban's really good down in Providence and Gustafsson struggles, maybe you see him during the regular season. But I'm not sure he's going to get the gig as Tuukka's backup right out of the gate.
Well, it would be interesting times in Boston. Joe, we could go on for hours talking to you about all the changes that are made, but we'll see it for, you know, Jets fans firsthand. Thursday, October 8th, the home opener for the Boston Bruins, Jets and Bruins. Thanks for joining us, Joe, and enjoy the season.
You got it, guys, and say hello to my good friends Mark Stewart and Blake Wheeler up in Winnipeg, will you?
We will do. We will do.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
When we come back, Chris Zelkovich, he writes for Yahoo, the Canadiens rating report. Talk about sports media and hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.